My cop brother abused his power because he knew he could get away with it, so I showed him what being on the receiving end feels like. My older brother has always been obsessed with having authority and making people submit to him. Whether it was bullying kids 3 to 4 years younger than him or scaring animals just because he could, he craved the feeling of power. I remember when we were kids, he'd corner neighborhood cats just to watch them hiss and arch their backs in fear. He'd stand there, blocking their escape route, this satisfied smirk spreading across his face as they cowered. Our parents always brushed it off as boys being boys, but I knew better. There was something darker in Gary's eyes when he exerted control over something weaker than himself. So it's no surprise that when Gary became a cop, he was anything but fair. He's taken down a kid's lemonade stand because the kid didn't have a selling license. Didn't matter that the kid was raising money for his dog's cancer surgery. The boy couldn't have been more than 8 years old, tears streaming down his face as Gary dumped out his pitcher of lemonade onto the sidewalk. He's arrested a 90-year-old lady for crossing the road too slowly. The light was green when she started walking. It only turned red when she had almost crossed. I heard about it from a witness who said Gary actually grabbed her arm hard enough to leave bruises, dragging her back to the curb before cuffing her. He's pulled fathers over with their kids in the car and made up laws on which to cite them, just so the dads could beg him to let them go, all so he could feel powerful and humiliate a dad in front of his child. The worst part about it was how nothing could be done. Not only was he a cop, but the head of his department was Hughes. They had been good friends since high school, meaning if anyone ever had a complaint about Gary, it went to Hughes who tossed it out. The two of them were thick as thieves, always had been. Hughes was just as corrupt, but smarter about hiding it. He kept his hands clean while Gary did the dirty work, and in return, Hughes made sure Gary never faced consequences. I thought nothing could be done to Gary until 3 months ago when he showed up at our house Friday night. It was around 8 p.m., and Maddie and I were just settling in to watch a movie. When I heard his knock, that distinctive 3 heavy raps he always did, my stomach sank. I didn't really want to hang with him, but he said he missed his younger bro and had life updates. Maddie shot me a look that said she didn't want him there either, but family was family. I let him in. While at my house, we started drinking. Gary always drank too much, another way to show he was in control, that he could handle more than anyone else. We went through the 6-pack I had in the fridge pretty quickly. When we ran out, I decided to go out to my car and grab the 2 remaining beers in the cooler from last weekend's fishing trip. I remember Maddie giving me this uneasy look as I headed for the door, but I figured she just didn't like being alone with Gary. I should have listened to that instinct, and that's when it happened. I came back inside the house not even 2 minutes later and heard my wife Maddie saying "stop" in this scared voice. It wasn't loud, more like a desperate whisper, but something about the tone made every hair on my body stand up. My blood froze. I rushed to the kitchen where her voice was coming from, and that's when I saw it. Gary was drunkenly pinning her against the counter. His hand was traveling up her shirt. She was trying to push him away, but he was overpowering her and had his head placed against her neck. The kitchen light cast harsh shadows, and I could see the fear in Maddie's eyes as she struggled against him. I remember seeing red. I dropped the cooler and just tackled him. The beers crashed to the floor, glass shattering everywhere. I knocked him hard across the face. He fell down, and I proceeded to get on top of him. Unfortunately for me, he's a cop. He has physical training. He's also a lot bigger than me, 6'2 to my 5'9, and probably 50 pounds heavier. So as hard as I tried to restrain him, it didn't work. He pulled me down too, before getting up to his knees and pressing them into my head. My nose hit the tiles pretty hard and started bleeding. The metallic taste filled my mouth as blood ran down my throat. Before I knew it, my arm was being twisted behind my back. The pain shot up through my shoulder as he wrenched it higher. He said he was arresting me for assaulting an officer. He then pulled out his handcuffs and cuffed me. Yeah, dude is so power hungry he carries handcuffs everywhere, even to family dinners. I remember my wife went to lunge at him to make him stop, but he just flashed her this creepy smile and pointed at the concealed weapon he carried, making her back off. The smile was the worst part. Not angry, not defensive, just pleased with himself. He called an on-duty officer, and they took me to the station, where Hughes personally processed me. The ride there was humiliating, sitting in the back of the patrol car with my own brother's handcuffs cutting into my wrists. They both sat across from me, shaking their heads in the interrogation room, putting on this whole disappointed act. Assaulting an officer, that's up to 8 years you're looking at. Gary could easily seduce that wife of yours in that amount of time. Hughes said it so casually, like he was discussing the weather. Every part of me wanted to do something to get me 25 life in that moment, but I held out. I knew they wouldn't press charges. I was Gary's brother after all, meaning this was just a warning, a power play to show me who was really in control. As expected, they let me go after making some threats, but only after also holding me in a jail cell for 48 hours to make sure I learned my lesson. Those 2 days were hell. They put me in with actual criminals, guys who'd done real time. The cell smelled like wee and desperation. I didn't sleep, just sat on the metal bench and planned what I'd do when I got out. Gary personally opened the cell and let me out. "Hope you've learned your lesson, little brother," he said, that same satisfied smirk from our childhood plastered on his face. I remember going straight home, dead set on just never talking to him again. Unfortunately, when I came home, I realized that was not an option. I found Maddie curled up in our bed, not really moving or saying much, just looking depressed and traumatized. The bedroom was dark, curtains drawn even though it was midday. She had a fresh bruise on her neck, purple and angry against her pale skin, and when I got into bed to hug her, she instinctively pushed me away. I held her hand from a distance, and that's when she started just sobbing. Her whole body shook with the force of it. It took me almost an hour to get the story out. Turns out, Gary came back to this house. He did it right after placing me in the cell. My wife opened the door thinking it was me, and Gary barged his way in. He had his way with her all night, not leaving till he was fully satisfied. She spoke in broken sentences, sometimes trailing off mid-word, her voice hollow and distant. Something inside me just went cold and quiet. quiet. I comforted my wife and spent the next 3 months playing the broken brother. I didn't go to family events, didn't reach out, just acted like I accepted what happened, but I didn't. Every night I lay awake planning, thinking, waiting. Maddie started therapy, but she still flinched when anyone touched her unexpectedly. She stopped wearing her favorite perfume because Gary had commented on it that night. Little pieces of her were disappearing, and I watched it happen day by day. You see, I knew Gary, and I knew that every Tuesday morning at 5 a.m., he went on this one specific 5-mile trail run. Rain or shine, hangover or not, Gary never missed his Tuesday run. It was another control thing, proving he had the discipline to maintain his routine no matter what. I waited more than long enough to make him feel safe, and then this one Tuesday, I got up at 4 a.m., kissed Maddie's sleeping forehead, got dressed in black clothes, and headed out. I brought my aluminum bat with me, the one from my high school baseball days that I kept in the garage. I ended up at this one particularly dark, sharp turn spot in the trail 40 minutes later. The spot was perfect, a blind corner with thick trees on both sides, no streetlights for half a mile in either direction. I knew Gary would go by here. I waited and waited, my breath forming clouds in the cold morning air, and sure enough, at 5:30 a.m., he turned the corner. I could hear his steady breathing, the rhythm of his feet on the packed dirt trail. I didn't waste time. I jumped out, saw him instinctively freak out, and without even giving him a chance to explain, I swung my bat at his kneecap as hard as I could. The crack sounded brutal. I even winced in secondhand pain. Gary screamed and went down clutching his leg. That's when, while he was screaming, I bent down over him and pulled off my mask. "Hi, Gary." I watched his face go from pain to shock to rage. He tried to reach for something in his waistband, but I kicked his hand away. I told him if he tried that again, I'd break the other knee too. He started yelling about how I was done, how he'd have me locked up forever. Spit flew from his mouth as he screamed threats. I just stood there holding the bat. I told him we needed to talk about what he did to Maddie. His face changed then, got this sick smile even through the pain. Said she wanted it, said she loved every second. I had to fight not to swing again. Instead, I pulled out my phone and showed him I was recording. Had been since before I jumped out. Got his whole confession on tape. His smile disappeared real quick. I told him he had two choices. He could resign from the force and move at least 500 miles away, or I'd send this recording to every news station in the state. Plus, post it online. Make sure everyone knew what kind of cop he really was. He started threatening me again, but I cut him off. Reminded him his knee was shattered. He'd need surgery, months of rehab, maybe never run again, and that was if he got help soon, which he wouldn't if he kept threatening me. I left him there on the trail. Took his phone first, though. Tossed it in the woods about a mile away. Someone would find him eventually. Probably take a few hours, though. As I walked away, I could hear him alternating between screaming for help and cursing my name. The sound grew fainter with each step I took. I drove home and crawled back into bed with Maddie. She woke up and asked where I'd been. I told her I went for a walk to clear my head. She believed me. Why wouldn't she? She curled into me, and for the first time in 3 months, she didn't flinch at my touch. Around 9 a.m., my mom called. Gary was in the hospital. Some jogger found him on the trail. Looked like he'd fallen and hurt his knee real bad. Maybe slipped on a rock or something. Mom was all worried and wanted me to come to the hospital. Her voice was frantic, going on about how he might never walk properly again. I told her Gary and I weren't on good terms right now. She pushed, but I held firm. Said I'd check on him later. Maybe. Maddie heard the conversation and asked what happened. I told her what Mom said. She got quiet. Then she said she was glad he was hurt. First time she'd shown any emotion about him since that night. I held her close and told her he'd never bother us again. She asked how I could be sure. I just said I had a feeling. The next few days were tense. I kept waiting for the cops to show up, for Hughes to come arrest me, but nothing happened. Mom called with updates. The surgery went okay, but Gary would need extensive physical therapy. He was in a lot of pain. Good. She kept trying to guilt me into visiting. I kept refusing. Then on day 4, Gary called me from the hospital. I almost didn't answer, but curiosity won. His voice was different, quieter. He said he'd been thinking, said he was going to take some time off from the force, maybe relocate, fresh start and all that. I asked how far he was thinking of moving. He said far, real far. I said that sounded like a good idea. We both knew what we were really talking about. Before he hung up, he said one more thing. Said if anything happened to him, if any recordings showed up anywhere, Hughes would know exactly who was responsible. I told him I didn't know what he was talking about. He laughed, but it was bitter. Said he'd have his resignation letter ready by the end of the week. I thought that would be the end of it. Gary would leave, Maddie and I could start healing, life would go on, but I should have known better. Gary never gave up power willingly. He was planning something. I just didn't know what yet. The first sign something was wrong came 2 weeks later. I was at work when my boss called me into his office. Said there'd been a complaint. Someone called saying I'd been drinking on the job. Said they saw me stumbling around the parking lot. Complete bullpoop. I hadn't touched alcohol since that night at my house. My boss knew it was crap too, but said he had to follow protocol, had to document it. I knew immediately who was behind it. Then things escalated. Maddie started getting hang-up calls at all hours. Our mail started going missing. Someone keyed my car. Little things, but constant. Wearing us down. Maddie was getting paranoid. Stopped wanting to leave the house. Started checking the locks obsessively. The therapy progress she'd made was disappearing. I wanted to confront Gary, but he was smart. Still in the hospital for another week. Had alibis for everything. And I couldn't exactly accuse him without explaining why he might want revenge. So we endured it. Documented everything. Installed security cameras. Changed our routines. The day Gary got discharged from the hospital, the harassment stopped. Just like that. No more calls. No more vandalism. Nothing. That scared me more than the harassment itself. It meant he was planning something bigger. I found out what a week later. Came home from work to find Maddie crying at the kitchen table. She had papers spread out in front of her. Legal papers. Gary was suing us, claiming I'd attacked him unprovoked, saying he'd been visiting to reconcile and I'd ambushed him on the trail. He wanted damages, medical bills, pain and suffering, lost wages, the works. The lawsuit was bullpoop, but it was smart. Forced me to respond, forced me to get get a lawyer, forced me to either lie in court or admit what really happened. And if I admitted what happened, I'd have to explain why. Which meant telling everyone what Gary did to Maddie, in public, on record. Gary knew Maddie couldn't handle that. He was betting on it. I called Gary that night. He answered on the first ring, like he'd been waiting. I asked what he wanted. He laughed, said he wanted justice. I told him to cut the crap. He got serious then, said he wanted the recording destroyed, all copies, and he wanted a written apology for the assault, admitting I'd attacked him without cause. I told him to go to hell. He said he'd see us in court then. Maddie would love testifying about that night, about what happened while I was in jail. I hung up on him. Maddie was falling apart, stopped eating, stopped sleeping, just sat staring at those legal papers. I told her we'd fight it, told her Gary was bluffing, but we both knew he wasn't. He'd drag this out, make it as painful as possible, and he had Hughes backing him up. Hughes, who'd already called our lawyer, mentioned how unfortunate it would be if certain details became public, how it might affect Maddie's reputation, her job, her family. I knew I had to do something. Couldn't let Gary destroy Maddie like this, but I had to be smart about it. Gary was watching now, waiting for me to make a mistake, so I played along, hired the lawyer, filed responses, acted like I was going to fight it properly, all while thinking, planning. The solution came from an unexpected place, my buddy Dylan from work. We were having beers one night and I was venting about the lawsuit, not the real reason for it, just that my brother was suing me over some family drama. Dylan mentioned his cousin was a private investigator, did background checks, surveillance, that kind of thing, said the cousin was good at finding dirt on people, real good. I met with Dylan's cousin Peter the next week, told him I needed information on my brother, anything that might help with the lawsuit. Peter said he'd see what he could find, warned me it might take time. I said I could wait. Gary had taught me patience. 2 weeks later, Peter called, said we needed to meet in person. When I got to his office, he had a thick folder on his desk. Turns out Gary had been busy, real busy. Peter had found three other women. All had filed complaints against Gary. All had been dismissed by Hughes. But Peter had tracked them down, talked to them, got their stories. One was a waitress Gary had pulled over repeatedly, kept demanding her number. When she finally complained, she lost her job. Restaurant owner said she was causing trouble. Another was a college student. Gary had responded to a noise complaint at her apartment, made her do things to avoid arrest. The third was a single mom. Gary had threatened to call child services unless she was nice to him. Peter had it all documented. Photos, recordings, even had a former cop who'd quit because of Gary and Hughes. Guy was willing to testify about the corruption, about how complaints got buried. It was everything I needed, more than everything. I called Gary that night, told him we needed to meet. He suggested the police station. I laughed, said neutral ground or nowhere. We agreed on a diner outside town, public but private enough to talk. He showed up in uniform, power play, still limping from the knee. We sat in a back booth. I slid the folder across the table, watched his face as he flipped through it, saw the moment he realized he was done, really done this time. I laid out my terms, dropped the lawsuit immediately, resigned from the force within 48 hours, leave the state within a month, never contact me, Maddie, or any of these women again. In exchange, I'd keep the folder sealed. Nobody would ever see it, unless he broke the deal. Then everyone would see it. Gary tried to bargain, said Hughes would protect him. I pulled out another folder, this one on Hughes. Peter had been thorough. Hughes had his own skeletons, his own victims. Gary's face went gray. He realized I'd won, really won, but Gary couldn't just accept defeat, had to try one more power play. Said even if he left, the damage to Maddie was done. Said she'd never be the same. Said I'd have to live with that, watch her flinch every day, know it was my fault for leaving her alone with him. I leaned across the table, told him he was right. Maddie was damaged, maybe permanently, but she was healing, slowly, and every day he was gone would help. Every mile between them would help. And if he ever came near her again, if he ever even thought about her, I wouldn't use the folder, I'd use the bat, and I wouldn't stop at the knee. Gary believed me, could see it in my eyes, the same look he used to have when he cornered those cats, but now it was directed at him. He signed the papers I'd brought, dropping the lawsuit. His hand shook a little. When he finished, he stood to leave, stopped at the door, turned back, asked if I really would have unalived him. I didn't answer, didn't need to. The next day, Gary submitted his resignation, cited medical reasons. His knee would never be the same. Hughes tried to talk him out of it, but Gary held firm. Within a week, he'd packed up his apartment. Within 2 weeks, he was gone, moved to Oregon, about as far as you could get, and still be in the continental U.S. Maddie didn't know the details, just that Gary had dropped the lawsuit and left town. She didn't ask questions, just held me tight and cried. Good tears this time. Relief. That night, she slept through without nightmares for the first time in months, but I knew it wasn't over. Not really. Guys like Gary don't just give up. They regroup, plan, wait. So I kept Peter on retainer, had him check on Gary every few months, make sure he was staying put, following the rules. For 6 months, everything was quiet. Gary got a job as a security guard, kept his head down, seemed like maybe he'd learned his lesson. Then Peter called. Gary had been asking around, trying to find other cops who'd had problems with me, trying to build a case, not legal this time, something else. Peter didn't know what yet, but said Gary was definitely planning something. I told Peter to keep watching, to let me know the second Gary made a move. The move came 2 weeks later, but not from Gary, from Hughes. He showed up at my work, in uniform, made sure everyone saw him, asked to speak with me privately. My boss let us use his office. Hughes sat behind the desk like he owned it. Power play, just like Gary. Hughes said Gary had been in touch, said Gary was worried about me, thought I might be unstable, dangerous. Hughes said he had a duty to investigate, make sure I wasn't a threat. I asked what kind of investigation. Hughes smiled, said he'd need to interview my co-workers, my neighbors, maybe search my house, make sure I didn't have any weapons, any plans to hurt anyone. I knew what this was. Harassment by proxy. Gary couldn't come after me directly, so he'd sent Hughes. Try to destroy my life from a distance, cost me my job, my reputation, make Maddie and me miserable enough that we'd beg Gary to call it off, give him back some power. But I'd learned from Gary, learned about power, about leverage. I pulled out my phone, showed Hughes a photo, him and the waitress, the one Gary had harassed. Except Hughes had done more than harass harass her. Peter had been very thorough. Hughes went pale, asked where I'd gotten it. I said it didn't matter. What mattered was where it might end up if he didn't leave right now and stay away forever. Hughes stood up slowly, said this wasn't over. I said it was, unless he wanted his wife to see the photos, his kids, his boss, the media. He left without another word. My boss asked if everything was okay. I said it was just a misunderstanding. All cleared up. That night I called Gary. He answered like he'd been expecting me. I told him nice try with Hughes. He played dumb, but I could hear the smile in his voice. I told him Hughes wouldn't be helping anymore. That card was played. Gary got quiet. Then he said there were other ways, other people. I said I'd be ready for them too, all of them, however many he sent, however long it took. Gary asked if this was how it would be forever. Him in Oregon, me in Texas, both of us watching, waiting. I said that was up to him. He could move on, build a new life, forget about us, or he could keep playing games, keep losing, his choice. He hung up without answering, but I got my answer the next week. Peter called. Gary had applied for a job in California, even further away, looked like he was actually moving on. I told Peter to keep watching anyway, just to be sure. Maddie was getting better, slowly but steadily. She'd started going out again, seeing friends, laughing sometimes. The bruise on her neck had faded, but I knew the internal bruises were still there, maybe always would be, but she was fighting, getting stronger. Then one night she asked about Gary, why he'd really left, why he'd dropped the lawsuit so suddenly. I'd kept the details from her, didn't want her to know about the other women, didn't want her to feel like just another victim, but she pushed, said she needed to know, so I told her, about the other women, about the evidence Peter had found, about the deal I'd made. She listened quietly. When I finished, she asked if I'd really hurt Gary on the trail, if his fall wasn't an accident. I looked her in the eyes, told her Gary had hurt her, had hurt others. Sometimes people like that only understand one language. She nodded, said she understood, said she was glad. We didn't talk about it again, didn't need to. But something shifted that night. Maddie stopped looking over her shoulder as much, stopped flinching at unexpected sounds, started reclaiming pieces of herself. The healing wasn't complete, might never be, but it was happening. 3 months passed. Gary stayed in California, kept his distance. Hughes retired early. Sudden decision, everyone said. His replacement was a woman from another district. No connection to Gary. No tolerance for corruption. The waitress got her job back. The college student graduated. The single mom filed a report about what had happened. With Hughes gone, it actually got investigated. I thought maybe we'd found our new normal. Gary far away, Maddie healing, life moving forward, but I should have known better. Should have remembered that Gary never gave up power willingly. He'd been quiet too long, planning too long. The call came on a Tuesday. Same day I'd confronted Gary on the trail exactly 1 year earlier. Probably not a coincidence. It was Peter. Said I needed to sit down. Gary was dead. Car accident in California. Drove off a cliff on a winding road. No skid marks. No other vehicles involved. Cops were calling it an accident, but Peter had doubts. I felt nothing. Not relief. Not sadness. Just empty. Asked Peter if he was sure it was an accident. He said he'd look into it. See what he could find. I told him not to bother. Whatever happened, Gary was gone. That's what mattered. I didn't tell Maddie right away. Waited until after dinner. She was laughing at something on TV. Looking relaxed. Happy even. I almost didn't tell her at all, but she deserved to know. When I told her, she went quiet. Asked how I felt about it. I said I didn't know. She said that was okay. We sat in silence for a while. Then she said she felt free. For the first time since that night. Free. Things. Just in case. She nodded and moved the bat back to its spot. A week later I got a call from an unknown number. Almost didn't answer, but something made me pick up. It was Sophia, the single mom. She said she'd heard about Gary. Said she was sorry for my loss. I told her Gary and I weren't close. She said she understood. Then she asked if we could meet. Said she had something to tell me. We met at a coffee shop downtown. She looked different from Peter's photos. Stronger. More confident. She thanked me for coming. Said she knew it was weird reaching out. I told her it was fine. Asked what she wanted to talk about. She said she'd been following Gary's career, keeping tabs on him, making sure he stayed away from her and her kid. When she heard he'd moved to California, she'd been relieved, but also worried. Worried he'd hurt someone else. Due to another woman what he'd done to her. To Maddie. To the others. I asked if she'd gone to California. She smiled. Said she'd taken a vacation. Needed to see the coast. Clear her head. Just happened to be the same week Gary had his accident. Funny how things work out. I said yeah, funny. We both knew what we weren't saying. She asked about Maddie. If she was doing better. I said she was. Getting stronger every day. Sophia said that was good. Said Gary had taken enough from people. Then she finished her coffee and left. We never spoke again. Didn't need to. Life settled into a routine after that. Work, home, dinner with Maddie. Normal stuff. Boring stuff. It was nice. Maddie started a garden in the backyard. Said she wanted to grow something beautiful. I helped her plant roses along the fence. Red ones. They bloomed like crazy that spring. Mom called less and less about Gary. The grief was fading. Being replaced by acceptance. She'd found some peace in believing it was just an accident. A moment of carelessness. I let her believe that. Sometimes lies are kinder than truth. Hughes reached out once. Left a voicemail. Said he wanted to talk. Clear the air. Make amends. I deleted it without calling back. Some bridges were meant to stay burned. Heard later he'd moved to Florida. Health reasons, people said. I figured distance was healthy for everyone. The other women from Peter's files started doing better too. The waitress opened her own restaurant. The college student got into law school. Said she wanted to help victims of police abuse. Sophia's kid made honor roll. Little victories, but they added up. Proof that removing one bad person could change so many lives. Maddie and I took a vacation that summer. First one since everything happened. Went to Colorado. Hiked some trails. Easy ones. Nothing too challenging. She was nervous at first. Kept looking over her shoulder on the wooded paths. But by the end of the week, she was leading the way. Pointing out wildflowers. Taking photos. Being herself again. One night in the hotel, she brought up Gary. Asked if I ever thought about him. I said sometimes. She asked if I had regrets. I said my only regret was not protecting her better. Not seeing the danger sooner. She said it wasn't my fault. Said predators are good at hiding. At seeming normal until they're not. She asked about the recording. The one I'd made on the trail. I told her I'd destroyed it after Gary left town. No need for it anymore. She said that was probably smart. Then she asked asked if I'd really have sent it to the media. I said absolutely. Would have burned his whole world down if needed. She kissed me and said she loved me. We didn't talk about Gary the rest of the trip. When we got home, there was a package on our doorstep. No return address. Inside was a newspaper clipping about Gary's accident and a note. Just two words. Thank you. No signature. I burned both in the backyard fire pit. Maddie asked what I was burning. I said just some junk mail. She didn't push. Peter checked in one last time. Said he was closing Gary's file. Asked if I needed anything else. I said no. Thanked him for everything. He said to call if anything came up. We both knew nothing would. Some cases close themselves.